Welcome to the Probate Podcast, where we talk about all the things you didn't know you need to know about probate. My name is Sherry Lund, and I'm so glad that you're here. I want you to understand the process and to know what to expect, because it's going to make things easier and it's going to save you money. And I'm here to show you how. Okay. Hi there. My name is Sherry Lund, and I'm here with Emily Taylor for our Probate Podcast. I'm bringing this as a community resource to the people in the Houston area and beyond, because I want you to have tools. I want you to be informed and educated and inspired to take your plans to the next level, help people that are going through this most difficult time. And I'm excited that Emily is my first guest attorney to explain to us. I've asked her to talk about probate and what she does. Let me tell you a little bit about Emily before we get started. Emily is an attorney with Rapp & Kroc here in Houston, Texas, and a proud graduate of Texas A&M University and South Texas College of Law. She specializes in estate planning, elder law, long-term care, disability planning, probate, and a whole lot more. She's counseled and represented clients in protecting their assets in estates of loved ones from the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program and putting in a plan in place to meet their long-term care needs, including receiving government benefits. Emily can help you with wills and trust, powers of attorney, Medicaid questions. She is a wealth of knowledge, and I'm proud to call her friend. Emily's also a wife, a mom, and a daughter, and I'm so glad to have her as my first attorney guest on the show today. So thanks so much, Emily, for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit about how you serve the people in our community.
Sure. So really plainly, I'm a probate attorney, right? I often hold myself out as an elder law attorney, though. So what that means is that fundamentally, I'm an estate planning attorney. I, like you mentioned, have a background in special needs. So although I do typical wills, trust, you know, all your regular estate planning directives, we also do a lot of special needs planning. It could be a child with a disability coming up and needing a guardianship when they turn 18. It could be an adult disability, a parent that you're dealing with, dementia. We do a lot of disability planning and guardianship work in this office as well. And then the elder law piece, often we're talking about long-term care. So what is it? How do we navigate it? That's probably a whole other podcast. And how do we fund it? Which is often the biggest question for people. So if we can figure out how to fund it or figure out what they need, because not every case is the same. They're all very different. We figure it out. And if we can't figure out how to fund it privately or through something else, then we look at Texas Medicaid benefits if it's someone who may be in assisted living, need help at home, or in skilled nursing. On the probate side, I help people through the probate process. In its simplest form, it's just somebody needs access to something because someone has passed and they don't have access to it anymore. It could be title to a house. It could be access to a bank account. It could be title to a car. And we need to go get it. How do we do that? There's so many different ways to do that. So we spend a lot of time with our clients figuring out first, the most important thing I think is what's the right avenue to make that happen? Because it doesn't always have to be that we're going to go to court, although sometimes and often it is. And even if we're going to court, there are multiple ways to get through the courthouse and get to the thing you need. So that's what I'm doing in this, you know, in this community is helping people in a really tough time figure out the legal stuff behind what comes next after they've lost a loved one and have assets and debts and things like that to deal with.
Yeah. And you mentioned that there were lots of different avenues. And one of the things that I've learned is probate is complicated and very specific to that one person. Tell me a little or tell us a little bit about you and your background and how you came to be in this industry.
Okay. So I'm from Arkansas, but I was raised in the Houston area. And as you mentioned, I went to Texas A&M and then I came back home to Houston to go to law school. And I had the opportunity. I don't come from a line of lawyers or even college graduates. So I didn't have a direction in mind necessarily. But while I was in law school, I thought I was going to go transactional. And I loved words. I was an English major and a business minor. So it all fit together. I was going to help these businesses and play with the words and the contracts. And as I got some experience, I just naturally ended up in more intimate conversations with people. It turns out I like people more than that and didn't necessarily just want to serve businesses. So, you know, that's where I landed. There was It was not terribly intentional. I landed there as I figured out that's what I wanted to do. While I was in law school, I clerked for the probate court. We have clinics at South Texas, meaning as a law student, you get some real hands-on experience, learning, representing real clients with an attorney, supervisor. They're all people that are at the clinics I served anyway. People who wouldn't have otherwise been able to afford a lawyer usually. That was a great stepping stone. I got a lot of good experience where I could at that level and then came out into practice doing exactly this. So it's all I've done. It'll be 9 years this year. And even though it's all I've done, every family is different, experience is different, the law changes. So it's one area of law, but it's a big area. It encompasses all kinds of things. So I'm still learning all the time, but there's a lot of people to serve in this city. So I've got plenty of work to do.
Yes, that's true. So who would you say your client is?
Great. So my client can be anyone, which is probably the worst marketing tool if my boss hears me say that out loud. But it can be. Right. It can, but it's usually on the probate side, it's obviously the survivor. Often for me, I'm getting a lot of work from people that are obviously planning their estates on the estate planning side. And that's usually because something has occurred to them, because it's not like a will is a new concept for most people I see. They've just never gotten around to it or something like that. Often they've been through a death themselves, which kind of brought their attention to needing to get their own affairs in order. They've married somebody, they've buried somebody, they birthed somebody, and that has suddenly gotten their attention. Or maybe their wealth has changed significantly. So often my relationship starts there on the planning side. And then when they have an event, somebody passes away, or often they have somebody, most people are sick or injured before they die. And so they have someone like that in their lives. They come to me and say, what do I do? I'm trying to figure out how to afford keeping my mom in her house and spending X on care every month. Can you help with that? Because for a lot of people, hopefully, I'm maybe the only attorney they've ever had to meet, right? They haven't gotten any trouble or had some other tragedy that they've had to experience. We get a lot of calls because between us and maybe your divorce lawyer, they've never met any other attorney. And so when they come looking our way, if we can't help them with their thing, of course, we try to find them someone who can. But that's how my clients come to me. It's a long answer to your short question. It's often just a life change or a life event that sends them my way in some capacity.
It's interesting that you said it's the survivor, isn't it? It's not the person who passed away. It's the ones they leave behind that you're dealing with in that moment.
Right.
And I think one misconception that we have is that it's an older person, and that's not always the case.
No, it's not. Right now, I just had a hearing last week for a woman who lives out of state and her mother died. And I'd be surprised if she's even my age. I'm in my 30s and I've had countless over the years. I have one right now. In fact, I'll say someone who is also my age and passed away. And so, you know, I'm dealing with his parents who are not old, you know?
Right.
So no, it's definitely not always the older people. Although when it is, that's a challenge all on its own.
Yeah. So one of my goals with this podcast is to educate people and to help them see the benefit of planning ahead and having their wills and trusts in place and not to put it off because it is problematic and it does unfortunately happen. So you and I were in a meeting together recently and you gave an awesome definition of probate. So for our audience today, can you just share your definition of probate?
I sure will buy. Give you the same one I gave you before. Sure. So probate is just the legal avenue of bringing an estate forward before the court. Sometimes that's the will, having the judge bless your will that you created and saying, this is a good will. We're appointing the person you named and sending them forward. If there is no will, then it is the act of bringing the applicant before the judge and saying, we have stuff we need to get access to, and I'm the person who wants to do it, and getting that blessing from the judge, and then being able to go forward and be the person in control of the assets of the estate of the person who passed away. I hope that was close. Was it close?
Yeah, that was really close. It was really close. Thank you for that. So you mentioned earlier that probate is complicated. And every case is different. And so that's why you can't just have a roadmap that says you do this and then you do this and you do that. Generally, you can. So what is something that someone could do that would make this process easier, that they could reduce the problems that they know about then those strange ones that have a tendency to pop up won't be so over the top crazy.
Sure. So what can we do? So one, we can communicate with our family. And I recognize that people are all over the map on this. So I will finish an estate plan and someone will say to me, are you going to send this to everybody I know, basically? And of course, the answer is no, because we have a privilege and a confidentiality. But then there are other people that say to me, you know, I don't have to give this to anyone, do I? So people are all over the map on how private they want to be about their stuff. And what I say to those people is, at a minimum, give your people my name, right? Or my business card. Give them the card of your CPA and your financial advisor. So they at least know who to ask when something happens. On the other end, I would say you want to think about things that are just really practical, like who has a key to your house? If you're gone tomorrow, who can get in? And do we like who that answer is, right? If you're gone tomorrow, if you have put all of your important stuff, you've done all your work and you put it all in a safe deposit box because you think you've checked all the boxes, that is lovely. Who can get into that safe deposit box, right? If no one else is allowed in, there's a code section in the probate code specifically that is about drilling safe deposit boxes because people do this all the time. So having access to information, I think, is huge. And there are so many cool ways you can do that these days. There are apps out there where you can put in all your information. You can put in where you're paying and the name of your fiduciaries and where your stuff is. And you give your family like a code, 1234. And your family could today go to the app and put in 1234. And you will have set up, hey, if someone tries to put in my code, call me or email me or text me or all of it. Every day for 3 days, whatever it is, you set up the parameters. And if you don't ever respond after that period of time you've allocated, then they'll release the information to your people, right? Technology has done all kinds of things for us. You can designate on your social media and some social media platforms. I've done an article about this on our website, who your legacy contact is. So who's allowed to memorialize your page? That's more and more important to people. So I just think planning, of course, is really important. For example, the case I have with the young guy who died, because he doesn't have a will, we're having to drag in his loved ones to come to court and testify to him and his affairs and his life. And right. If he had a will, that's a piece, at least, that we could cut out, right? We don't have to drag someone in to say, he was my best friend, he was just engaged, and give a story, because his will tell us what he wanted and it won't really matter what his family affair looked like.
Right.
So yeah, preparing your documents are really important. Having access to information is really important. And then lastly, I would say every once in a while, take a step back and think about how simple or not your affairs are. I had a case where this guy got 14 different bank accounts. They collectively were just shy of $4,000. The amount of work and the expense that it took for us to list him on an inventory, or his sister to go looking everywhere and contacting all these banks. Just, you know, simplify to the extent you're comfortable where you put your money and how many assets you have and how easy it is to locate those assets, where we can get them, where they are, maybe they're stored somewhere. You know, getting that information in a place where people can find it is huge. Information for your family is huge.
And in streamlining it, it's really saving the estate money, but also your loved ones' time that are having to deal with finding all of these loose ends that we didn't take the time to tidy up before the person passed away. So there's an idea out there that attorneys are just out to get your money. But when you leave all these loose ends all tangled and all of that, it that someone has to go through that because the courts won't release that money until they can figure out that it really does belong to that person and this person really deserves to get it.
Or the institution won't. But yes, when you go through probate, most of the probate processes on the court, you're going to involve, if it's an administration, you're going to put an inventory together. You have to. The court requires it. And even if we don't file it a public record, we don't always have to file it a public record, but it does have to be done. And so it's good for everybody. Right. I want my client to be at the executor or the administrator safe and checking all the boxes so nobody's nigh them. So I want them to get all the information. And in our office, we're really intentional about making sure that our executor does their job well, that they get access to everything there is because you're in it. Right. We're in it. We're going to do it. We're going to do it right. So yeah, we're going to go get everything we can and find everything we can. But sometimes people leave a big job.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. So what's the most common question that people ask you about what you do or probate or something along the lines of your capacity as an attorney in this stage of life?
One of the questions I get a lot is, oh, you're a probate lawyer. Oh, aren't people horrible? Isn't it terrible? More often than not, people surprise me and they just really want to get through it and love each other well and, you know, do the right thing, the thing that mom wanted or whatever. I have a really good example that is not a good planning tip. So with a grain of salt, but I have a client right now who handwrote something on his will. In Texas, the law says if you interlineate on your typewritten, notarized, signed will, we ignore your interlineations, meaning you just made it harder for us to read because we're going to ignore whatever you scribbled on top, okay? But in this family in particular, they really wanted to honor those scribbles because they knew the guy, they knew that's really what he wanted. And then when they first came to me, I said, okay, yeah, that's sweet. Sure, we'll see how this goes. And we've been going through it. We're almost done now. And it's true. There are 5 people involved and all 5 beneficiaries are so cooperative and they've been so generous to each other and generous to the people that the decedent loved. They had a big party. Even I was invited. I didn't make it. But, you know, whenever he finally had like a memorial service. And sometimes people surprise me. So a lot of the time I get, aren't people terrible? Which I think is what people say to family lawyers, too, that do divorce and custody. But you'd be surprised how often people aren't terrible, I guess.
Well, and honestly, when you're working with people that are grieving and that are having to figure out money and how to pay for the mortgage when the funds may be locked up, and it's super stressful and people are not at their best when they're going through this season. And so I think that's one of the things I've learned about you guys as attorney and maybe any attorney. I don't know. Y'all find us in these moments or we find you when we're at our worst and you're there to help us pick up the pieces and come through it better on the other side.
So unless you win the lottery, you're usually not calling an attorney because something good happened, right?
That's right.
Either unless you're adopting a baby or you won the lottery. I don't know that there's any lawyer that really gets called when you're in a good spot, right?
You're in a terrible spot.
Right.
And then you can't talk to anybody about it. So you hear all of our stuff and then you can't go and talk to anybody about it. What's a question that people should be asking you that you don't hear very often?
Sure. I think people don't know what they don't know. Every family is really different. I'd say a thing that people don't think about that they should be asking is about often their family status. I see a lot of blended families. There are huge legal ramifications in Texas to having a blended family and not having a will. And it is not always what people like. And there's even ramifications to having a will and not understanding what you're giving away. Often married people don't appreciate that no matter whose name is on the paycheck, unless you have a prenup or a postnup in Texas, half of that money that you earned while you're married belongs to you and half of it belongs to your spouse. That's something people don't really understand. I also have seen a lot of weird marriage issues lately. I have another man who passed away and he was married and a lot of people are talking to me like he's not married. And I have just discovered that he, in fact, was never divorced. So you can be common law married, right? You can live with somebody, hold out that you're married, agree to be married. You can't be common law divorced. So if you were ever married, even common law married, you have to go get a divorce. If you want to be married, my advice to you is get married on paper, not just in spirit, because that really complicates estates too. And it gets even more interesting when we talk about same-sex marriages because they could have been married in another place. And maybe they aren't with that person, but they were never divorced. I mean, there's a lot because of how recent the law is, right? For same-sex marriages. There's a lot of really interesting issues showing up for people. So are you married? Are you sure you're married? Are you divorced? Are you sure you're divorced? And if you have a blended family, meaning you brought children in from another marriage or your spouse brought children in from another marriage, or you have some of all of it, here's mine and ours. We can plan around all of it, but know the ramifications because they're big for a lot of people and unexpected.
Can you describe maybe an example of what that ramification might look like?
Well, I have an ugly one. If you want to hear an ugly one, I have an estate where really the man did a lot of good planning. I'll leave out some of the ugly stuff, but the shortest version is his children and his wife, who is not their mother, have been at odds. We've been in litigation for at least 2 years now over this estate. And if you die in Texas with a spouse and you live in a home, that surviving spouse gets to live there unless they waive that, like really, really, really done it right and waive that right somewhere. They get to live there for the rest of their lives, even if the house belonged exclusively to the dead spouse. And even if she hates it there and wants to leave, she has the right to live there for the rest of her life. Okay. So in this scenario, he left his house to his children and his wife is allowed to live there for the rest of her life. And we know that, and that's okay. But that is a surprise to a lot of people that we have a homestead occupancy right. The Texas Constitution said we're not going to leave a spouse high and dry with nowhere to live if there was a marital home. So now they can leave. Obviously, they're not in prison there. But if they choose to leave and abandon that right, they can do that. But we can't, as the kids, kick them out. And then the other things in the law that are interesting that come up like this are like a spousal allowance, meaning there's a code in the law that's really intended for creditors. So I'll tell you my personal experience. My dad died. He left us more debt than anything else. And had we known, we could have probably mitigated some of this. But the idea is the law says we're not going to leave a spouse without a house. We're also not going to leave them with nothing. So if there is any money, we can protect a certain amount of money from creditors, right? Medical debt, credit card bills, whatever the thing is. We can also protect some stuff from creditors. We can protect like one car and some jewelry and some recreational equipment. It's a bizarre laundry list of stuff. But you can keep most of your household goods and a lot of things you're allowed to keep as the surviving spouse and save you from a creditor. Well, you could also do this against your beneficiaries. So in my same case, we have a decedent who left everything to his children, but the surviving spouse said, well, I also get all of this stuff because I'm the surviving spouse. And she can use that law in that way. So that's kind of a surprise to people a lot of the time, especially in blended families who believe that their loved ones have done the planning they're supposed to do. When we come back and say, well, but also she can hold on to the car until this time or, you know, whatever it is. They can hold on to assets for a little while and in some cases for a really long time. I think that's probably,
that's
probably a good example.
That's a great example. And so what I'm hearing is that even though it was left to the kids and the kids may want to sell that property to be able to divide that asset and the equity that's in that home or whatever, that is put on hold because of this law in Texas. And that brings up another good point too. Thank you for sharing that example, is that I've heard some things that other states use different language. They have different ways of doing things. And even within the counties of Texas, there may be some differences in how they implement the laws or carry out the statutes that are in place. Can you talk on that just a little bit too?
Sure. So starting large, it's different from state to state, of course. And this is why some people, I think, in Texas are really afraid of probate, is because in places like California and New York, it's really different. In California, you're allowed to charge a percentage of the probate estate as your attorney fees. So in Texas, we are ethically not allowed to do that. It is illegal for me to say, oh, I will take on your work in your estate. I'm going to take 3%, right? That would be lovely. There are lots of estates where I would be driving a very different car. That's the way the world works, but it doesn't. Okay. So people in California do a ton of trust planning because they're trying to avoid probate. Rightfully so, I think. In New York, where my dad is from, I received a notice once after his aunt died, and it was to me because I was his heir. And I called the attorney and just said, hey, I'm just curious. I do this for a living. Why am I getting this notice? I see that there's a will and that I'm not included. Why, you know? And she said, oh, well, in New York, we have to notice everybody, the beneficiaries under the will and any intestate heirs. So if she had died without a will, I would have received something, this great aunt of mine. But she had a will. And I thought, that is just stirring up trouble, right? We're saying, here's a will, you were left out of it. I mean, what a funny thing. And in Texas, there are some circumstances where we have to do that too. But in most cases, that's not the case. So yes, it's very different state to state. In Texas, it's really not that scary. Of course, easy for me to say, I suppose. And then county to county, yes. Even within the county, in Harris County, for example, I practice in a handful of counties around here. I've been as far as Williamson County and done some work actually in Jones County in the age of Zoom. So But in the counties I'm usually in, even within Harris County, where we have four statutory probate courts, they're all different to some degree, right? And what they say yes and no to, or what you can slide by, and, you know, they're all a little different. So yeah, it depends on where you, what county you're in when you die. That's pretty important. And then where you land even there. But I would say probate generally, just if you really want to get into the weeds of it, we have statutory probate courts in most big counties in Texas. Fort Bend was like the largest county, I believe, to not have a statutory probate court, and they just got one passed, so they'll have one soon. Otherwise, if you are in a more like rural or small place where we don't have a statutory probate court, then you're in a county court of law, and they might see your probate right after they've seen a divorce. So they don't exclusively handle probate work. I don't mean to infer anything by that, just that you want to understand that sometimes those counties are going to interpret it totally different because they don't see it every day, or they don't see it as often. They don't live in it like we do. And then you have Montgomery County. They do something unique in that they are a county court of law. They don't have a statutory probate court, but all of the probate work in Montgomery County goes to one specific judge. So although she's not the probate judge in Montgomery County, she's the probate judge in Montgomery County, right? And so I think that some of the misconception for people is they're not getting the same answer everywhere. So of course it's confusing when one friend tells them this and their neighbor told them that, because they might've really had different experiences with similar acts, just depending on where they landed.
Right. Even in the same county.
Sure.
But then if you read a book on the executor's duties, for instance, or you read something on the internet, you need to make sure that the date is current. And that it's for your state specific stuff. But even then, we don't want to be practicing law. Like you said earlier, the laws change. What are your thoughts about, I get this question a lot, can't I just get the form from Office Depot and fill it out? What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. We don't have enough time. I understand wanting to DIY. We do our taxes on TurboTax. Okay. I get it. But I would say just proceed with caution. I would, of course, say I don't think it's the best idea. But the issue that I find with most of those, even on LegalZoom, they will be told, I'm told anyway, that they click the Texas button or whatever, you know, and then they'll come to me with this document and they'll wonder why Bank of America won't honor it or whatever the thing is. And it's because you didn't actually get a Texas form, or maybe you got the right form, you didn't execute it appropriately. Some forms need a notary, some need a notary and two witnesses. Some can have either or, you know, depending on the document we're talking about. Some can be signed electronically. A lot of them cannot. People just don't know what they don't know. I had a case where somebody picked up a deed from Office Depot. It was a quit claim deed and I had nothing to do with it, but it came my way later on. And the title company said to me, that basically doesn't even exist, that deed that's there. And these people had lived under the presumption that they had transferred property for And so often we're more like the gatekeeper, right? I'm preparing the documents that I think are the best documents you can have for you in your situation, but it's not, I'm not your end game, right? The judge is, the bank, the title company. I mean, they're the people that we're trying to really prepare you for at the end of the day. So I get why people do documents that way. I would say in almost every case, it would have cost far less money if they had paid a lawyer the amount of money it would have taken to just get their plan done the right way the first time, than it's taking their family on the back end to unwind whatever mess they've left.
So is it basically like that document didn't exist and you have to start over, like you didn't have a will at all?
So first of all, in Texas, we're really friendly to out-of-state will. What people aren't as friendly with are the ancillary documents, right? Whenever someone's incapacitated, everybody gets a little scared and the banks go a little cold and everybody is a little nervous because now somebody has their hands in somebody else's cookie jar, right? So the incapacity planning, those are very state-specific documents. Will have very few requirements, really. For ancillary documents, a lot of them have to be, and when I say ancillary, I mean your financial power of attorney, your medical power of attorney, those things. They have to be in a substantially similar form to what the law in Texas says. And there are also specific items to address. And if they're not addressed, they're out. More often than not, it's that it exists, but it's either ineffective or ineffective to a point. And my best example is a man who wrote a will. He, whatever it was, I think he wrote it in his handwriting, but as an example, he had a will and it was not done by an attorney and presumably he had no counsel. He said, I leave, you know, this and this and this to my sister. And he named his sister as his executor. He died. She died like a week later. So now we have no executor. We also have a few things he wants to go to his sister. But we don't know where all his other stuff goes, right? People will leave out things like residuary clauses and things like that. So what happened is we probate his will and we have to do an heirship, which is a different type of probate administration or piece of the probate administration. So now instead of going to a lawyer, getting a will done and having one probate to do, we now have two pieces of the probate to get done because he wanted to do it himself. And then the court appointed an attorney ad litem on top of it. You know, so now you have two lawyers involved instead of just the one probate lawyer. And people don't know that that's what happens. But if it's because they're trying to save money, you're going to do better for yourself and your estate if you get it done the right way the first time, rather than your family untangling it on the back end.
This can be a full-time job for them, but it doesn't have to be. And they still have jobs to go to and children to raise and all of that stuff.
Well, that's where you come in, Sherry.
I know. And hopefully this podcast, you know, will help educate people so that they can start to see the benefit and the wisdom in going to get the plan done. So, Emily, as we wrap things up, I just appreciate so much what you've shared with us today and what you're doing for our community. Tell us a little bit how people can reach you, how they can contact you, how they can find you online and social platforms, and if you have anything coming up that you want them to know about.
Okay. Yeah. So we are a business law firm in Houston, and we help obviously all kinds of people in their probate and estate planning and guardianship work. And that does not discriminate at all. So if you have a business as part of it and you want to pass that on to the next generation, oh, it gets even more complicated. But we're unique in that we can help those people too, right? We can help them figure that out. And if things get tangled, we have a litigation arm in our office that can help untangle that too. But it makes us really unique in that we can plan for the regular person, the business owner, the wealthy person, the person with special needs, all of it, right? We're really kind of a weird duck as far as estate planners go. And we do all kinds of things in this office. And so the thing we have coming up is not really for us, but I wanted to certainly plug it because it's a great cause. And so Sky High for Kids is having a clay shoot in our office. Rap and Croc is sponsoring. But Sky High for Kids, if you want to Google them, they come around people dealing with pediatric cancer. So they come around and comfort the families. They are providing funds for research. They have some really cool stuff going on with TCH, with Texas Children's. Here in town, they're doing a couple of things. So it's a really great cause, and our office is sponsoring that. If you want to see the photos after it happens, this clay shoot, our LinkedIn page is where you're going to get good stuff. You're going to get articles, like I mentioned, about your digital assets that we write. The attorneys write articles all the time in this office, and they get pushed out on LinkedIn. The fun stuff gets to LinkedIn sometimes too, but we have a Facebook page and we have an Instagram, and the handle of Instagram is Rap and Croc Law Firm. But that's where you see they're taking us to the Astros game next week. I imagine we'll have photos. You see some of the culture and the fun stuff of our office there too. So that's where you can find it. You can find me personally by email is the best way to reach me. My email is etaylor@rapandcroc.com, or you can always call the office.
Great. Thanks so much. Emily, I so appreciate you and what you're doing. Thanks for being my first attorney guest on the podcast. You're always welcome. The only first. So thanks for being my guinea pig and helping me through this fun time. So have a good rest of your day. Thank you, Emily, for being on.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
That's all I have for now. New episodes of the Probate Podcast will come out on Thursdays. I also have a free public support group called Houston Probate Support on Facebook. You don't have to live in the greater Houston area to be a member, but I'd love to have you join me there. I'd love to have you join me on any of these platforms, including this podcast, and I'll share the links of where you can find me in the show notes below. I'm looking forward to us connecting. See you next time, and remember, you matter.